All right, so we're at South by Southwest, and who are you?
Chris Messina.
All right, so you're very generous just to volunteer for this. I'm going to ask you questions about music.
Okay.
What was the first music you collected? What was it, and what format did you acquire it in?
First music I collected. Actually, you know, if we go back far enough, I think it was actually the Beach Boys when I was like six. And that was all on audio cassettes.
Gotcha. And so how do you listen to music now?
You know, I've been listening more and more with my iPod just because it comes with me everywhere. And especially as I'm getting more portable, it's hard for me to keep all my laptops like synchronized, so I just like dump music on there. But I also find that it's just nice to be able to like plug into like when I get a zip car, you know, bring my iPod with me and stuff like that. More and more, it's just really that stuff. I do some listening through like services like Pandora or Spotify, where it's like streaming audio. Those are pretty nice when I'm kind of like, man, my iPod only has this much space, and I keep listening to the same damn music. But yeah, otherwise, it's just a lot of stuff I just already have.
So you collect it. So most of your collection is digital. It's MP3 files.
Yeah, I've got a couple CDs, but you know, even like for example, moving to I just bought a MacBook Air. There's no optical drive, so CDs are useless to me.
Right. So my next question is, how do you acquire the files?
Well, predominantly through. Through downloading, through various mechanisms. Occasionally, I will do the right thing, and occasionally, I'll borrow music.
I've been asking people these questions, and I feel I'm a little bit uncomfortable talking about acquiring music through my, like, I buy music on eMusic or iTunes. Where do you buy music?
Well, so there's sort of a, here's a contentious thing, I guess. A lot of the music that, let's say, I've gotten through BitTorrent, I've actually previously purchased, but for any number of reasons, because the music, let's say, is on like an external hard drive or it's someplace else, or like I bought the CD, you know, and I just don't have the CD with me, or for example, I'm on an Air, I kind of feel like I've already paid for, you know, the use of that music, so it isn't even that the moral quandary is that it doesn't feel like stealing because I've already paid for it in some form, right? So there's that issue of it. Where I do pay for music, though, lately has been Radiohead and Nine Inch Nails. I actually bought the $80 or was it 80 pounds, whatever the most expensive vinyl version for Radiohead was, and I actually bought the $300 version of the Nine Inch Nails album. Mostly because I'm just, one, I really want to encourage this behavior, and two, it's like, well, this is a fairly historic sort of moment where these bands are going out doing this thing on their own, and they are actually connecting with, in a fairly, you know, really direct way, with people who are listening to their music. So it's a relationship that feels very straightforward, as opposed to all the sort of like back and forth and indirections that you go through buying music through, you know, iTunes and things like that. I have bought music from iTunes. The experience is pretty good. I've actually more recently been buying music through Amazon. I find that process is actually really pretty nice. It's pretty inexpensive, higher quality sound and stuff like that. So I guess I am every now and then actually buying new stuff.
And it's interesting. There's a pattern emerging in people I'm talking to where if you owned it, like that Beach Boy cassette,
yeah, right.
you bought it. So now if you see it online, it feels comfortable. That ethical quandary of that you described. How do you draw that line? So, for instance, you wanted to get that Beach Boy album, but the only available torrent was the Beach Boy discography, including, you know, Brian Wilson's solo works. What do you do in that scenario, especially if you really end up loving the music?
Well, I mean, there are two things. I actually oftentimes download entire discographies just to sample the music, you know, like oftentimes maybe I'll hear one track of their new stuff that's really interesting, but then I'll be interested, you know, what else did they have before? And it's a great way of kind of having a very low risk of trying out and exploring new stuff. And that actually sort of introduces me to new stuff that then I can add to Pandora, which then generates new recommendations, which allows me to discover more music, like stuff I didn't know about before. So it's kind of an interesting way of branching out, I guess. In other ways...
But the discography then kills the opportunity to purchase more...
Yeah, for sure. Well, but another way to look at it too, though, is that you can get a better BitTorrent downloader. So for example, there's an application called XTorrent that allows you to pick specific files from like a discography, and you're only downloading that portion of the torrent. That I find to be pretty useful too.
Yeah. Let me see if there's any other things I want to ask you. So is this an uncomfortable conversation because of, like, in terms of, people feel pretty strongly about it. I mean, okay, one thing, we're recording it, but even if the mic wasn't here, I think people have different comfort levels with their own, you know, airing their own internal ethical conflicts.
I guess, yeah. I mean, there's certainly some apprehension about it and about the risk that one takes in exposing one's behavior. You know, at the same time, it's mostly unclear to me whether or not, you know, since I've already purchased this music and I'm just trying to move it to a different device, you know, what is the standing there? And I think that that's sort of an unclear question. The other aspect is that, you know, I've been doing a lot of work on sort of open media and open formats and trying to figure out new models and new ways of supporting artists, because I believe that that's absolutely essential. The fact that the recording industry hasn't found any great mechanisms other than using a bludgeon, you know, to sort of beat its customers into submission, to me is not a long-term solution to making music or the production of music viable. So, you know, we work with Songbird, and, you know, at their core is supporting artists in some way. And I think that part of it is figuring out, well, can music become either a promotional mechanism or vehicle, or, you know, are there other ways to help support artists that are indirect? I mean, there's a great article in Wired about sort of going free. And I think that more and more we're going to see opportunities there where you can do a lot of other things. For example, the fact that I spent $300 on a Nine Inch Nails album with, you know, 36 tracks, that's a lot of money per track. And that's an order of magnitude more than I've spent, you know, on CDs and whatever in the last year to basically one individual. And I think that that's huge. And the reason why is because there's a great deal of value add there. I feel like I'm participating in something. I feel like there's a connection to the artist that it hasn't been muddled by all this other stuff. And he's doing a great job of using social media and social tools that are basically freely available to anyone. He's using freaking blogger.com, you know, to like promote himself. And because of that, I guess I really sort of respect that and want to support that. So whereas other artists are starting to do that more and more, I feel like there's an opportunity for me to want to support them directly and to actually, you know, provide them my money in so much as they're embracing these things.
And you, what did you get for your
my $300?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, I assume it's a pretty cool product, right?
It's a very cool product. You know, first you get to download like the entire album, you know, which, like, you know, Trent Reznor uploaded to BitTorrent himself, right? But I also get a vinyl version, some special four limited like LP version. I get the double CD set, a DVD with all the original source files for the music, so I can go in and like take it into some audio editor like GarageBand or whatever and actually mix up the tracks myself, should I ever have the time to do so. But I also get a signed copy of this stuff by, you know, Trent Reznor, limited to 2,500 copies. And you imagine all across the internet, all across all Nine Inch Nails fans like ever, having something that's limited to 2,500 copies is pretty, you know, unique. And so I guess right now I'm sort of wanting to collect all these things as a representation of when the music industry started to shift in favor of the artist, because the artist stood up and did something for themselves.
Well, so, and with that sign thing, you're getting something that cannot be mechanically reproduced.
Right.
You're getting...
Yeah. I can't download it.
Yeah. That's pretty good. And you also get to tell me the story about how you shelled out some premium cash for something, and you get to probably, you know, feel good.
Well, and it's, you know, it does become kind of a conversation piece. It's the same reason why, you know, I bought the Helvetica DVD, you know, when I could have otherwise, you know, figured out a way of downloading or something. I have to take this.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for your time.
Thanks. Right.